Greetings and welcome back to our ongoing series of shiurim, of lectures in Megillat Rut. This is the penultimate lecture. We will be looking in this lecture at the beginning section of the fourth chapter of Rut, which picks up, if you will recall, after that very, very momentous night on the threshing floor with Boaz and Rut. Rut came back to the city and brought Naomi the 6 barley pieces that Boaz had given her, measured out for her. And Boaz had promised that he would see to the business of offering the redemption, and it's unclear the redemption of what at this point, to the closer relative who had the hierarchical rights of redemption. And if he would redeem, then fine. And if not, then Boaz would step in. One look back at chapter 3, a paragimel. If you take a look at Pasuk Yud Bet, verse 12, V'ataki omnam ki goel anochi. I am a goel, v'gam yesh goel karov meni. There's another goel, another redeemer closer than I. Then, look at Pasuk Yod Gimel. Lini alai, the vayabi baboka imi galech, tov yigal. If he redeems you, fine. V'noech poz le galech, ugaltich anochi. So, you find now that suddenly the word goel is coming with tremendous, frequency here. And if you look back at the introduction of the word Goel in verse 9, which is the first mention of it in that entire scene, add them together and you suddenly find that there are 7 mentions of the word Goel, or of the root Gaal, in this chapter. And that sort of prefaces or sets us up for the scene that we're about to see in Perek Dalet. Goel, again, being redeemer, but in this context, meaning, as it does in Leviticus 25, a close relative whose job it is to redeem his relative's property or self. Now, chapter 4, Uvoaz ala hashars. Boaz went up to the gate. The reason that the verb used is to go up could be topographical. It's possible that the gate of the city was at a higher point of the city. But here it almost assuredly refers to something beyond that, which is that the gate of the city was the place where the courts were held, where all public meetings were held. So in a sense, this is really a rising up. Now, Boaz, as you recall, is going to ask and to offer to another closer relative the opportunity to redeem. Redeem what? Again, we don't know. Boaz ala shar vayeshev sham. So he went there to the gates. V'hinei ha-goel over asher diber Boaz. Again, the word goel. Here is the goel that Boaz had mentioned. Now, vayomer shura shva po ploni almoni vayasa vayeshev. There is a lot to discuss in this one verse. The first thing is that Boaz, just a translation, Boaz says, Sura, turn aside, Shvapo, sit here, Ploni Almoni. Ploni Almoni means John Doe. I'll talk about that in a minute, what it means, what the root is, and why it is almost assuredly not what, it is assuredly not what Boaz really said. Vayasar Vayeshev, and the fellow turns and sits down. Now, first things first. Ploni almoni is a phrase that's used in Tanakh 3 times, once for a person in this case, and twice once in Shmuel, once in Malachim, to represent a place. Ploni almoni means such and such, and it comes from the following words. Ploni is associated with the word pele, pele, which means a wonder, something that is beyond you. So ploni means a person or a place that can't be mentioned because it's beyond you. We don't know what it is. Almoni is associated, and it's in modern Hebrew. In modern Hebrew, the usage is for anonymous. Almoni is associated with the word ilem, mute. Again, one that cannot be said. So ploni almoni is one that we do not know, that is beyond us, one that cannot be said. So it's more than just such and such or John Doe. It is something that's almost ineffable. However, it's quite clear that Boaz did not say those words, because he's not going to call a fellow by some sort of name like that. And he assuredly said to him, come here, Chaim Eliakim, come here, Moshe Yosef, whatever his name was. And the fellow then came and sat down. So we have to ask the question why the text does not tell us his real name, and why the text substitutes Ploni Almoni. Now, in the other two cases where Ploni Almoni shows up, it's possible that that's what the person said. He's saying, I'm going to that place, and doesn't want to mention where it is. In the case of David, where it's a subterfuge, that he's meeting the boys that don't exist, at Makom Ploni Almoni and Shmuel Aleph Chaf Aleph. So there, it could be really what he said. And it's a secret place, I can't tell you where it is. But here, he's talking to a real person. So he had to say his name, and he's a close relative of his. He certainly said his name. So you have to wonder why the text wipes his name out. We will see a little later on. The second thing to point out is that Boaz is clearly a very powerful person, both in the context of the family, and we'll see another context in the next verse, which means that Boaz has a lot of power. And this doubles back to what happened the night before. Boaz had all the power in the world to take Ruth and have relations with her, but he restrained himself to go by the rules. And here again, even though he clearly has the power, after all, when he calls his relative, the fellow sits down without a question, does exactly what Boaz says, Surah Shev, turn and sit, turn from where you're going and sit. And the guy says, Vayasa Vayashev, he turned and he sat. He stopped where he was going and he sat down without questions asked, doesn't say a word. So Boaz clearly has power over him. Boaz clearly is a commanding personality. And nonetheless, Boaz still, as we'll see, plays by the rules. Now, Vayikach Asara Nashim, Mizkenei Ha'ir, Boaz then turns and takes 10 men of the elders of the city. Vayomer Shvupo, and in the same way he says, sit down. So Boaz is now commanding not just a relative of his, but also the elders of the city, the judges, whoever they may be, Vayishvu. And Vayeshevu, and they also sat down. So we see that that Boaz, again, is a commanding presence, and theoretically he could turn around and say, this is what I'm doing. You, Ploni Almoni, and you, Zekenim, you better all agree to this. But he doesn't. And now that he's got everybody assembled, let's see what he does. Vayomer la Goel. He turns to the Goel, the unnamed Goel. And he does not start where we would think he's starting to talk, where he would think he would start to talk about Ruth and marrying Ruth, but rather, Chalkat HaSadeh Asher L'Achinu L'Elimelech, the portion of the field that belongs to our relative. Achinu here doesn't mean brother in the strictest sense, but rather in the broader sense, our relative. You find this, for instance, in Bereshit Yud Gimel. Avraham says to Lot, we are brothers, not exactly brothers, we're uncle and nephew, but our relative, Elimelech, Machran Naomi. Now, a literal translation would render that Naomi has sold it. But that's not really what's going on, as we will see. Hashava Miste Moav. It means that Naomi is going to sell it. Who is Naomi? The one who has returned from the fields of Moav. Now, why is Naomi selling this field? So this is something that the commentators struggle with. What rights does she have to sell the field? After all, in Halacha, the wife does not inherit her husband's property. However, Naomi certainly has rights as a widow to be supported by the estate. And if the estate won't support her, she has the rights to sell off some of the estate in order to cover the ketubah payment. So she has the rights to sell it. However, what will happen as a result? As a result, her field or her husband, Elimelech's field, will leave the family and will go to some other family. And that is an overriding concern. We'll talk about this a little bit later, but that is an overriding concern in the context of biblical man, the importance for him of maintaining his land, his ancestral land. If you want a clear example of this, take a look at Malachim Aleph, first book of Kings, chapter 21, the story of Navot, where he refuses point blank to the king, to Ahav, to sell off or trade his ancestral property. Chalil Ali, mi titiyat nachlat avotai. So Naomi, who now is forced to sell off this property, is now endangering the lineage, if you will, of the land as connected to Elimelech. And now, what does he say? V'ani amarti. So he said, this is what I said. Now, important rule in Tanakh, whenever you have the word amar, to say, without a target, who you're saying to, it means thought. V'ani amarti means, this is what I thought. Egle oz nechalimor. I will reveal to your ears, meaning I will tell you. Purchase it in presence of all those who are sitting and the presence of the elders. So now we notice that we get the sense there's not just 10 elders and Boaz and Ploni, there rather is an all assemblage that's come together, and it's no wonder. After all, the harvest season is over, so people aren't as pressed to work, and Boaz and this other fellow who's evidently an important personage, and the elders have all been gathered together, so the word goes out, they all come together, and we will see that there is a large assemblage. So he said, here's what I thought to do, you should buy it in the presence of all these people. Boaz is very smart. He has gathered all of these people together to create a situation which he will eventually be able to manipulate to what he wants. So we'll see that in a minute. But in the meantime, he said, I've brought everybody together. Im tigal gaal. If you're going to redeem it, redeem it. As he said in the last parak. V'im lo yigal. If you're not going to redeem it, hagid ali. And tell me. Ve'da ki em zulat chaligol. And I know that there's no one beyond, besides you. V'aniyachi acharecha. Meaning, you're the first and I'm the second. So if you don't redeem, there's no one else. It's me. Right? Which means that either you buy the field or I'll buy the field. Now, again, we're waiting on the sidelines wondering what happened to Ruth. How did this shift to a field? Vayomer anochi egal. And the fellow says, fine, I'll redeem the field. I'll buy it from Naomi to keep it in the family. Naomi gets her money. Great. Notice, by the way, that from the beginning of the chapter until this point, there have been 7 mentions of the word goel, just like we had 7 in the previous chapter. We have 1 mention in the first pasuk, ha-goel. We have 1 mention in the 3rd pasuk, Vayomer la goel, and both of those instances refer to the person. And in the 4th pasuk, you have 5 instances. It's a very intense concentration of the word goel. Im tigal gaal, vim lo yigal, hagid ale veda, kenzel chaligol, v'nochi acharecha. And all of these are the verb to redeem. So the first 2 are the noun, a redeemer. These 5 are all the verb. If you redeem, you redeem. If you don't redeem, then I'll redeem. He says, I will redeem. Good. Now, Boaz throws an interesting monkey wrench into the works, and this is what we've all been waiting for. Vayomer Boaz. Biyom klot chasadeh miyad Naomi. On the day that you buy the field from Naomi, ume'et, and this word ume'et really should be understood as gam'et, meaning also Ruth ha-Moaviyah eshet ha-meit, the Ruth ha-Moaviyah, who was the wife of the deceased, kanita lakim shemeit al nachlato. You also have to acquire her in order to keep the name of the dead alive on his property. What is Boaz talking about? But this takes us back to Ruth's little 3 little words, ki goelata, that changed the entire scene the night before, as we saw in the previous podcast. Naomi's original plan was for Ruth to go to Boaz, and Boaz would like her and would marry her, and all would be fine. Ruth turned it around by turning the entire scene from one of personal resolution and personal happiness to a redemption of the family and a redemption of the name of Elimelech that stood to be erased because his name would not be continued. There'd be no continuation through him. She turns it into an act of geula. Now, Boaz does the same thing. Acts in kind, and starts by saying you have to redeem the field. But what's the ultimate kindness that you could do to really keep Elimelech's name alive is to have a child with his family member that would be born onto his property. Lakim Shem HaMeit Al Nachlato. To keep the name of the dead alive on his property. That's the ultimate goal. And therefore Boaz says, if you're going to redeem the field, also marry Ruth. Now, the Redeemer has every option here to say, I'll take the field, I don't want Ruth, if he's not interested. He doesn't have to tie the 2 together, this linkage is artificial. However, Boaz done something very smart. He hasn't negotiated privately with the fellow, so he has the ability to say, well, I'll take this and I won't take that. He's done this publicly in front of everyone. And now the power of social opprobrium goes to work, where Boaz says, if you're going to do an act of chesed, do the full act of chesed. And if the Redeemer is interested in Ruth, that's great. But if he's not, he's going to be forced in a position of saying, I have to walk away from the entire deal. And that's exactly what happens. Vayomer ha-goel, lo uchal ligol li, penashchit et nachlati. The goel says, I cannot redeem it because I will destroy my nachala, my inheritance. What does that mean? Does that mean that he has other kids and doesn't want to have more kids that will then eat away at their inheritance? Does it mean that he has a wife who will not tolerate another wife? Does it mean that he doesn't like Ruth personally? Does it mean, as Chazal suggests, that he does not agree with the notion that a female Moabite may marry into the nation? For whatever reason, he will not marry Ruth. We don't know why. It really doesn't matter. The reality is he will not marry her. And so therefore he says, Ga'al lecha atad gulati, you redeem the redemption I was going to take, kilo uchal ligol. And the public stance of Boaz has worked. And now this fellow backs off. And now we have a pasuk Zion, which is an interjection. We have one other model of this in Tanakh. The truth is there are many, many models, but one other explicit model of this in Tanakh. I'll get to it in a minute. But notice that just as we had in verse 4, five mentions, which is an intense number, of the word Ligol, you have the same thing in pasuk Vav, verse 6. What's in the middle? In the middle is verse 5, Boaz's monkey wrench. In other words, up until verse 4, Plony is going to redeem, I'll redeem. Verse 5, Boaz says, okay, you're going to do that, and the word redemption doesn't show up. If you're going to acquire the field, you have to also acquire a root. The redeemer now turns around in verse 6 and says, I can't redeem. I can't destroy my geulah, my nechalah. Therefore, you do the redemption because I can't redeem. And again, 5 mentions, mirroring verse 4. Now, verse 7 is an important interjection, which tells us something about when Megillat Rut was at least published, meaning a final presentation of Megillat Rut, the way we have it, is that the mode of demonstrating the symbolic demonstration of acquisition that took place in Ruth's time, in Boaz's time, as we'll see here, was symbolically the taking off of a shoe. Whose shoe? Who takes it off? Unclear. And it's machloket in the Gemara, Kalev Shemocha, Kalev Shokona, Ravin Levi, and Bab Metzia. However, what is clear is that by the time Ruth is published, nobody even remembers such a symbolic act as being associated with a kinyan, and therefore verse 7, which you could almost put in parentheses, reads as follows: V'zodefanim b'Yisrael, in the old days, ala geula v'ala tmura, for redemption and for barter, l'kayem kol davar, or to solidify any sort of a deal, to confirm a deal, shalaf yishnalo, a man would take his shoe off, v'natan l'reyeo, and give it to the fellow, meaning the other fellow, v'zot hatud abisol, and this is also testimony. Meaning, any time that a deal was going to be sealed, any time that a barter, that a sale, that a commitment was made, a man would take off his shoe and give it to the other fellow. Who's taking off whose shoe? Unclear, but that was the testimony. And after that parenthetic statement, we have in Pasuk Tet, from Boaz Lazkinim B'chol Ha'am, sorry, Pasuk Chet, Vayomer HaGoel LeBoaz, so the Goel said to Boaz, Knelach, he said, okay, purchase, you get it, you get the field, you get root, Vayishlof Nalo, and he took off his shoe. Who took off his shoe? Again, we don't know, and we don't really care. The main thing that happens, of course, we care halachically for Kinyan Sudar, but we don't care right here for this purpose. What is clear to us is that the symbolic act that demonstrated that the purchase rights had transferred to Boaz, and that allowed him to now buy the field from Naomi and to marry Root as a goel, not as an individual interested in marrying her, but rather as a redeemer who is redeeming the name of Elimelech and redeeming Ruth to therefore marry her and have her be on his field and have her bear a child with him to would grow up on the field and carry the name, as it were, of Elimelech. I'll say as it were, explained in the next podcast about what it means to carry the name. Now is his right. So now Boaz solidifies and confirms this deal by turning to the elders and turning to the people around and says the following, Edim atem hayom, you are all witnesses today. Sorry, I'm going to go back one step to Pasuk Zion. I mentioned there's another example of this phenomenon in Tanakh. If you take a look in Shmuel Aleph, the first book of Samuel, chapter 9, in chapter 9, Shaul, who we meet at the beginning of chapter 9, Shaul is on a quest to find his father's lost donkeys. In the middle of that quest, which is a quest which we know is God's way of bringing Saul to meet Samuel the prophet, so that Samuel can ultimately anoint him as the first king, or leader of Israel, unclear if he's really a king, on the way, Shaul wants to go home because they haven't been able to find the donkeys, and he's concerned that his father may indeed be worrying about him. His caddy, who he took with him, suggests they go see the man of God. And the man of God in those days is called a seer, a roeh. By the time Sefer Shmuel is published, we don't know what a roeh is. We call him a navi, a prophet. And therefore, the text interjects in verse 9, V'zot l'fanim b'Yisrael, the same introduction. In the old days, a person would say, when they wanted to go see the man of God, Kamara ish b'lechto l'drosh Elohim, l'chuv v'nachad haro'ah, let us go to the seer. What we call today a Navi, they used to call a Ro'eh. And then the text goes on, and the interjection becomes clear, because a couple of verses later, Saul and his caddy go on their way up to the city and start asking, where's the Ro'eh? They come into the city, they meet Shmuel, they don't know who it is, they say, where's the house of the Ro'eh? He says, I'm the Ro'eh. And suddenly all of that becomes clear because of this interjection. The reader at the time of Sefer Shmuel is published doesn't know what a Ro'eh is. He won't understand the conversation without that interjection. Same thing here. We won't understand why Boaz suddenly takes his shoe off without the interjection of verse 7 that tells us that that was the way that they would confirm a business deal, a barter, an agreement of that sort. Good. So now that the symbolic act has been completed, back in verse 9, Vayomer Boaz lezkenim v'cholam, Boaz turned to the elders and to all the people around and says as follows, Edim atem. Now, pay attention, because verse 9 and verse 10 run together. They're all Boaz's formal statement. He starts with the words, Edim atem hayom, you are all witnesses today. And this is a formal statement, not colloquial. Ki kanit et kol asher le'elimelech, I have now acquired everything that belonged to Elimelech. Ve'et kol asher le'chilyon u'machlon. Remember, they were gone at the beginning of chapter 1. We haven't heard about them until now. Kilion and Machlon, who were Elimelech's lamented sons who died, Miyad Naomi. I have purchased them all, everything that Elimelech owns and his inheritance that would have gone to his sons, I purchased them all from Naomi. Vegam et Rut HaMoaviah, Eshet Machlon. And now for the first time and the only time we find out which one of the two sons Rut was married to. Rut the Moabite, who was the wife of Machlon, Kaniti Lilisha, I've acquired as a wife. For what purpose? Hakim Shemet al Nachlato, not to keep me company, not for romance, not for eros, but rather to keep the name of the dead alive on his property. For the Karet Shemet mi Machav, and his name should not be cut off from the rest of his family. Umishar Mikomo, and from his gate, meaning from his city, Edim Atem Hayom, and he concludes it in the same fashion as he began it, Edim Atem Hayom. This is what we call an inclusio, where the beginning and the end of the statement are the same word or words, the same phrase. In this case, Edim Atem Hayom, you are all witnesses today. And they conclude with the same phrase, Edim Atem Hayom, we are all witnesses today. They are all witnesses, you are all witnesses today. So what has he had them testify to? That he has purchased everything that belonged to Elimelech and everything that had gone to his sons, his inheritance when he died, and also Ruth, and he's brought this all together for one purpose, and that is to keep the name of the dead alive on his property so that his name should not be cut off from his family and from his city. Now everybody recognizes that Elimelech lives through, and here's where it gets a little bit odd. He lives through whom? Through Boaz, some sort of a relative, and through Boaz's union dafka with Ruth, who is a former daughter-in-law that he never met, and at least it's according to the sequence in the first chapter, and through them, the child will be born on his property, will keep his lineage alive. We will see in the next and final podcast how this relationship will be made to be considered to be a continuation of Elimelech. And now, how does everybody respond? We're only going to do the first half of verse 11, and that is as follows: Vayimru kol ha'am asher bashar v'hazkenim edim. Everyone who was standing there, and now we find out that indeed, as Boaz intended, it's just not just the 10 elders and Boaz and Ploni Almoni, but it's a lot of people are there. All the people are standing there, and the elders say, Edim. This is a formula that we're familiar with from other places. For instance, in the 23rd chapter of the book of Joshua, Perek Chaf Gimel of Sefer Yoshua, Yoshua administers an oath to the people that they will remain loyal to God, and he says it exactly that way, Edim Atem, you are all witnesses, and the people answer, Edim, indeed we are witnesses, to the fact that we are committing ourselves to not worship other gods, etc. If you take a look in chapter 23, in chapter 24, in the last chapter of Sefer Yoshua, after Yoshua warns the people about straying and telling them that they cannot worship God unless they do so purely and exclusively, in verse 22, Vayomer Yoshua al Ha'am, Edim Atem Bachem, you are your own witnesses. Ki Atem Bachartem Lachem Et Adonai Avodato Vayemru Edim. And they all say yes, Edim, exactly like we have here in Rut Perek Dalad, where the people declare Edim, and they all accepted that. What will transpire from this point on in the chapter, and it's a strange place to cut in the middle of a verse, but you see that that word Edim concludes, there is one word response, and it concludes the legal portion of the stand at the gate. From here on in, it's going to turn into a beautiful blessing that the people will give Boaz and Ruth, the child that's born. We'll learn about the birth of the child, and there will be a whole different orientation to the presentation that's there. But just a couple concluding words to this first part. You notice that the word Goel, in one form or another, shows up 14 times in this chapter. It will show up again later on, but in this, the legal section of the chapter, both the narrative and the formula, it shows up 14 times. 7 times at the beginning, when everything seems to be going in one direction. And remember that generally, as I mentioned in the first chapter, generally a milah mancha, a key word, shows up in Tanakh 7 times or some multiple of 7, and there are countless examples of that. It showed up 7 times in the third chapter, where the geula was set up. It now shows up 7 times at the beginning of chapter 4, when Ploni Almoni, the putative Goel, is going in the direction of redeeming. In verse 5, Boaz throws a monkey wrench into the works by adding Ruth into the mix. The Goel refuses to go along, and again we have 7 mentions of redemption, but here it is where he refuses and he turns to Boaz, and Boaz indeed says he will redeem. Take a look further, because you have, again, in verse 6, 5 mentions, like you had in verse 4, of the word Goel. In verse 8, you have Vayomer HaGoel. Again, it is now the noun, as we had in the first 2 mentions in the chapter. It's the Goel, meaning that just as the first mention in the chapter, the Goel was a noun, similarly in the last mention in the chapter, in verse 6, the Goel is also, in verse 7, Geula here is referring to the generic act of Geula, but beforehand, in verse 6, you have 5 mentions, 4 of which are the verb of Geula. So out of the 7 that show up beforehand, 5 are the verb and 2 are the noun, and the 7 that show up afterwards, 5 are the verb, 2 are the noun. They're not placed exactly in symmetry, but nonetheless, you find that there is an act of Geula going in one direction. Boaz throws the monkey wrench in, throwing a root into the mix. The Goel then backs up, and the Geula turns to Boaz, and it goes from a formal Geula now to the legal presentation that does not include the word Geula, and that includes Boaz's the act of the taking off the shoe, and then Boaz's declaration that he has acquired everything, and including acquiring root, and what the purpose of that is. Lakim shemamet al nachlato. And that his name should not be cut off. From here on in, the entire direction is one of the focus on the future child that is born, and on the role that that child will play for the family and ultimately for the future. And that is what we'll pick up in the final podcast. I will also post with the final podcast a chart which will chart out how the word Geula plays out in conjunction with another word which will be the key word of the second half of the chapter and will take us to the conclusion of Megillat Rut. Mirtz Hashem, that will be posted before Shabbat, so everyone will have a chance to have the entire series of 10 podcasts on Megillat Rut before Chag HaShavuot. Meantime, everyone should have a wonderful day.